Y'all, we doing a part two for Who is Satan and What are Demons? Part two. Man, this is an amazing topic because honestly, as someone who's been doing this thing called Christianity for a long time, I never even thought to ask the question. It's really interesting when you just start doing a little bit of a deep dive and expanding your mind on how things could be or what things could be. This isn't change the narrative of who Christ is, so that's not even what we're talking about. But more importantly, it's the practice of opening your mind and thinking beyond what you've always been taught to experience and maybe find something new that you didn't know before. So we know you're going to enjoy it. Here is Knights at the Roundtable. And welcome to another episode of Knights at the Roundtable. It's your boy, Man Weezy. I got the queen, Angela Johnson, to the right. Angela Johnson Reyes, excuse me. Be Real out in Los Angeles. We in Nashville. We doing it. When I tell you I had a blast just reading and researching this episode. So we did Who is Satan part one. This is Who is Satan part two. I kind of feel like we can just keep going because this is so interesting. And I think what's even more interesting was the fact that I never even did this at any point of my Christianity. Like I never even thought of asking questions. I just kind of like received what they told me. And let me preface that with the fact that I can't stand people who make arguments based on what other people told them. And now I'm like reading stuff for myself and I'm like, man, you know, we've had on this podcast a lot, William Matthews. And I remember when the first time he told me that our creation story wasn't a unique one. Yeah, but it wasn't a unique one. The other religions, other societies had similar story.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, snap. Are you for real? I thought we were like the only ones. And so now when I'm thinking about this idea of Satan, you know, I just started Googling, started reading, you know, and I went to the History Channel.
I have something to say about what you were just saying.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just took what they taught me as it, but it's more than that because you're not a person that just takes what somebody tells you and then
right.
That's it. You do your own research. However, in that whole period of time, you were taught to research a certain way. You were taught that this means this. So if the preacher did a sermon about it and you went and did the research, you would find the scriptures that supported what you were saying because you were reading them the way you were taught they were supposed to be read. So it's not like you just took what the pastor said and was like, oh, that's true. Like you took what he said, you looked in your Bible, you go, oh yeah, it says that here in the Bible too. But now doing like the extra, like reading outside, which is why it's funny. A lot of Christians are like, only read the Bible, like nothing else. Like if it didn't come out of the Bible, then it's not truth, you know? But like these types of questions you were learning outside of the Bible. Oh, other religions have story that's similar? I didn't even know that because you weren't really taught to look at other religions.
I don't know if I was not taught to. I just think that for whatever reason, I think what we do, especially in the religious sector, is we find a narrative that seems comfortable and massively accepted. Then we read and absorb things that fit and supplement that narrative.
Right.
It's the same thing with Republican, Democrat. You pick a side and then you only ingest news, speakers, whatever from that side and you get into an echo chamber and it's not even, you just don't even think to ask questions beyond what is presented.
Yeah.
So, which you should because that's an actual like provocative thinker, like someone who wants to know. And I think what happens is at some point you think you know everything like I did. And then you're okay with not learning anymore. Yeah. Like you'll read the Bible again and again and again and again. And you know, but that's pretty much it. You won't really like dissect it unless your field is that of a theologian or someone who's trying to break the Bible apart for a studious reason. First, you're trying to write a dissertation or a paper and you need to go into all these things to support your points. But for your average Bible reading Christian in America, it really is enough to just believe what everybody believes because it's not necessarily the fact of you got it all right, but at least you got most of it or enough of it right to feel safe.
Yeah.
To believe that you are going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like I remember hearing growing up, because I am definitely like that type of person. That's like, the masses believe it, it must be true then. Mm-hmm. Like, who am I to disagree with theologians who study for a living, and I don't like reading. So I'm definitely like that kind of person. But I do remember growing up in church or whatever and hearing on multiple occasions people talking about, oh yeah, you know, when kids go off to college, they end up losing their faith because they start reading about all these other religions and all these other things. And they would say it as like, it's a bad thing. Like, oh, they got educated and lost their faith. Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that something to be looked at? Like, when you have information, you're able to poke holes in what you believe. Don't you want to poke the holes? Like,
no. I mean, think about your own self. Like,
I mean, yes, I don't want to do that work, but I'm saying, if you're finding out like, wait, this doesn't make sense, this doesn't line up. Like,
but how would you find out if something doesn't make sense? You'd have to be searching for it. If you're not searching for it, then you wouldn't be like this. Name one time when you were in the flow of the Christian bubble that right. you ever thought, this doesn't make sense. Every yeah. single question has an answer from the other side. It's like every point is like, yeah, but this, every mm-hmm, but this, mm-hmm. but this. So it's only those who go beyond the normally yeah. asked questions discover something more.
It's because, like, a couple things, right? You guys are all saying really good things, but a couple things. Most people just want to be taught what to think.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't want to be taught how to think or how to step beyond and critically think or analyze something. So there are very few people who are actually like, I want to be a thought leader. Most people, most humanity is like, just tell me what to think and I'll be fine with it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I think most of us don't purposely push ourselves beyond our comfort zone, because why would we? There's no real incentive to. So the thing that does happen is painful moments and suffering in our life. And mm-hmm. that's the thing that causes us to get out of our comfort zone and reassess things, because it's only in those times of harsh adversity and painful moments that we actually have eyes to see something different than the walls we see in our comfort zone.
Right.
Hmm. So it's like, we intentionally don't put ourselves out of that place to the edge of ourselves. None of us do that, really. Like, I think in my heart, I don't want that. I just want truth. And I'm just searching after truth, which kind of puts me on a path where I'm like constantly battling my comfort zone. But for the most part, most of us, we just have a moment, a relationship lost, a loved one lost, a tough break. We get fired from our job. A relationship changes in our life. And then boom, it's like that shock to the system that all of a sudden is like, oh, actually, that doesn't actually make sense. Mm-hmm. So I think God, in his graciousness and his love for us, he allows us to go through those things because he knows we're creatures of comfort and we're going to do everything we can to stay in that place that we're familiar with. And so,
you know what I'm realizing as you say, one of my trigger words is, or trigger statement is comfort zone, because it's been used so much in Christianity.
Yeah.
And I think about it and I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, everybody wants to be comfortable, but your comfort zone, I think it, what it means is you are in a place where you think you know it all.
And you're stagnant.
So you stop learning.
Yeah.
You just stop. I don't think I'll ever, well, let me never say never, but I think it's going to be very difficult for me to ever reach a comfort zone again. Because I am fully aware that my minuscule attempt at learning everything that there is to learn, not only about God, but life, people, this world, I don't think I'm even going to get to a minuscule close idea of how things work. So there is nothing for me to feel comfortable in. I don't feel comfortable in real estate. I don't feel comfortable in marriage. I don't feel comfortable in the studies of humanities. I don't feel comfortable in the study of God, because I'm a 40-year-old finite human that is presented every day new things that I do not have answers for. So what the hell do I have to feel comfortable about? I don't even fully I can't tell you how this phone works. And yeah. I use it every day. And I couldn't tell you how I pick up this phone and call someone on the other side of the earth. I don't know how we're talking right now. I don't know how I can see you. I couldn't explain it. Even if I Googled it, I wouldn't know what it meant.
Yeah.
So it's interesting when you start asking the most basic questions. And I, you know, when it comes to Satan, like I did a simple, like, let me go to the History Channel. Because the History Channel always has amazing documentaries on spirituality. And it's usually never from a place of like, we're discussing agenda. this to disprove Christianity. They're just all about the history of different religions, like trying to lean you away.
Right.
So on their website, anyone can go history.com. It says, who is Satan? The popular image of Satan is a horned red demonic human figure with a ponytail and sometimes hooves.
Pointy tail.
To Christians, sinners are sent to his domain, hell, after death. Hell is described as an underground world dominated by fire and sadistic demons under Satan's command. Satan's first appearance wasn't in Christianity. He began as the Zoroastrian devil figure of Angra, Manu, or Ahurama, which opposed the Zoroastrian creator, God, and tempted humans. Satan is later portrayed in Jewish Kabbalism, which presents him as a demon who lives in a demonic realm. The name Satan first appeared in the book of Numbers in the Bible, used as a term describing defiance. The character of Satan is featured in the book of Job as an accusing angel. In the apocryphal book of Enoch, written in the first century BC, Satan is a member of the Watchers, a group of fallen angels. Later established as a nemesis of Jesus Christ in the New Testament, the final book of the Bible, Revelation, depicts him as the ultimate evil. It's the Christian figure of Satan that Satanism directly references. I thought that was so interesting because, once again, it's not original. Really, what Satan or the devil, like I looked up the devil everywhere in the Bible and I never noticed that it was lowercase. Everywhere. It was lowercase because it was just meaning accuser. It just meant accuser. When it comes to Satan, it means adversary. The first definition just means adversary, which is usually something like, so you can be a Satan of anything. If we hate obesity, we can be a Satan to obesity. We could be a Satan to anything that we are adverse to, or the spirit of Satan. And so I thought this was interesting that I didn't even understand, which I got to go read the book of Numbers again. Numbers 22. It says, I like always reading Jewish perspective of everything. So on myjewishlearning.com, Satan in the Bible. The Bible contains multiple references to Satan. The word appears just twice in the Torah, both times in the story of Balaam, the seer who is asked by the Moabite king Balak to curse the Jews. When Balaam, goes with Balak's emissaries, God places an angel in his path. Satan as an adversary for him. The term appears in multiple other instances in the prophets, often in a similar context, referring not to a specific figure as the Satan, but rather as a descriptor for individuals who act as a Satan, i.e. as adversaries. Only twice in the Hebrew Bible does Satan appear as a specific figure, as the Satan, one in a brief reference in the book of Zechariah, where the high priest is described as standing before a divine angel while Satan stands at his right to accuse him. The other is in the book of Job, where Satan has a central role in the story as an angel in the divine court. According to the biblical narrative, Satan, here too, commonly translated as the adversary, seems to urge God to create hardship for his righteous servant Job, arguing that Job is faithful only on account of his wealth and good fortune. Take those away, Satan claims, and Job will blaspheme. God permits Satan to take away Job's wealth, kill his family, affect him physically, none of which induces Job to rebel against God. The book of Job is sometimes cited to support the claim that the Jewish view of Satan as an agent of God is different from the Christian view, which sees Satan as an autonomous force opposed to God. In the story, Satan inflicts suffering of a human being and seeks to induce him to sin, but only with God's permission. Isn't that interesting? Because in Numbers, it says that God sent the Satan.
So there was almost this picture of him being a part of this godly council. Like, you know, in Greek mythology, and we see on Mount Olympus, it's Zeus and the gods, and they're there, and they all have their function of what they do. And this is the picture of who the Satan person is, almost a part of that council that is like on that Mount Olympus with God himself and is using his powers to test believers and their faith. Mm. And so what you're saying, Zoroastra is it was this religion that existed, I think, like
4,000 years ago.
Yeah, by it was Persians. Like 4,000 BC, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, the prophet of that was Zoroastro. I keep thinking of like Astro World, the Travis Scott album. Anyways, Zoroastra. Okay. Yep. And he was a prophet, and he was one of the main guys who categorized having this God that was this good, benevolent, kind God, and then having the very dark version of that and imposing all of the evil, the bad. And so you had these two figureheads. It is light, it is dark, it is good, it is bad. And before that, there wasn't really that that dualistic thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And again, thinking, believing something like that is far easier than it being a little bit more murky and the fact that this dude, Satan, was on this godly council with God.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting because obviously we know, and we spoke to this earlier, there's so many other religions that helped influence our religion. And the tendency is to think that we have the cornerstone of truth. Like, we're the first ones that landed at truth, and we're like sticking our flagpole in the ground, Christianity. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the truth is that's not the case. That's not even the truth, because we were influenced by so many other religions. I mean, our religion that was birthed out of this was Judaism, right?
Which existed at the same time. That both could be claimed to be the first monotheistic religion. Both can come and make that claim. They both existed and started at the same time. One Persian, one Jewish, but had the idea, or they were similar ideas of a monotheistic religion, which is beyond interesting to think about this because, you know, can we definitively answer whether or not Satan is a specific person? Not sure. But we can definitively answer the term Satan means adversary. And in the Bible, it was used by God to come against something, which was very like enlightening. Go ahead.
So with the Satan, like what you were just reading, like in this verse, it's a fallen angel. In this verse, it's simply the accuser. In this verse, and so like Satan takes on different meaning forms, right? Is it similar to, and I haven't finished the book yet, but thinking about Richard Rohr, Universal Christ, and how Christ is not Jesus's last name. Like, right.
It was a, yeah.
So
a name, yeah.
Is it the same type of thing where like the Christ can take on different meanings in situations? And I could be completely reading that wrong.
No, it's what was said. Look, because again, I need to go back and read Numbers 22 because it, where it says it is.
But would it be the same Satan and
it's Christ? The Satan. That, it's a descriptor.
But is Christ also a descriptor?
The Christ. Correct.
The Christ.
Like
and
Jesus.
The Satan?
Christ wasn't Jesus's last name.
Right.
Right.
Like Satan is not that being's name.
Correct. It's a descriptor.
Yeah. It's a more of a title or a function.
Which is what is so, it's so crazy because we've made it a boogeyman. Yeah. As opposed to the ability of everyone can act. Is it even, well, I wouldn't want to say it could it be, you know, a positive or a negative thing. I think it can be used in different ways. Obviously the term is completely garnered a negative thing based on how we have created this thing in the 19th century when it all started. But I think as you continue to understand it, it's like, oh man, I get why, you know, this podcast we're like listening to said the Satan. So I want to play this first clip. Let me get it to you guys.
As it were.
Hmm.
And that that on levels beyond our conscious ability that can be tapped into. Mm. And it can be tapped into for good, and it can be tapped into for evil. Mm. And I that's all I'm really trying to say. And that's why a person on a – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brett.
I was just going to say, too, the you know, I've experimented with this a little bit to see how much we're dealing just with different reality – or no, the same reality with different cultures. And what I've seen is there is tremendous sameness, and there's also some specific difference. So, for example, what I've noticed is quite often, if you treat something as a demon, it'll act like a demon. If you treat mm-hmm. something as a dissociative part of a human psyche, it'll act like that. If you treat as a shadow to be expelled, then it needs, you know, you do that. But if you treat it as a shadow side to be embraced, it acts like that. So to some degree, the counselor or the deliverance minister actually imposes a framework over the person. Wow. And then, and I'm not saying that's even bad. It's like, that's why all of
them. So this is talking about like deliverance ministry and how if you treat something a certain way, it'll act out in that certain way,
he compared it to hypnosis,
right?
Like suggestive thinking, suggestive hypnosis, and treating it like that. Like, oh, this demon is coming out of you. Next thing you know, you start talking in a foreign language that you don't know.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's beyond interesting. I'm like, oh my God. I don't know if you have anything to say, B. If not, I'll
No, it's definitely interesting. And again, I could actually, like, there's a part of me that I'm like, yeah, that actually makes sense. And then two, it's kind of like, again, in saying all of this, this conversation is so nuanced. So it's like, it's not either or.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably both and more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But obviously there is a component to projecting something on somebody and that thing manifesting, right? Like last episode, we were talking about this kid that had one of the most brilliant descriptions of demons that I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that starts with us. It becomes uncoupled from us, excuse me, and it takes on a life of its own.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's something like, even if I'm saying something or I'm creating a structure or framework over a person, that thing can actually become real, uncoupled from me, and take on a life of its own.
Yeah.
So it's funny because I remember I used to cast out demons all the time. It's been a minute since I've seen like a crazy manifestation of like someone rolling on the ground or slithering like a snake, like I talked about in our Halloween episode. And it's also the thing that I don't look for anymore. Like, I don't look for demons to be casted out. I'm like, man, I want to see people healthy and whole.
Which is crazy because in this, they point out what's the difference between that of where you're talking about.
Yeah.
And someone in a psychology office that decides to be free from alcoholism.
Yeah.
Like, what's the difference? Apart from the theater of it, you end up with the same result, right? You're delivered from alcohol. That's the demon of alcoholism or you're the free. Demon. You know, what's the difference between that and then getting free in a psychology office? You know what I'm saying? Both are very much deliverance. You know, which I, in one of these clips, it'll say, before I play the next one, did you want to say something, baby?
Yeah, I lost it. I was trying to find it again.
Okay. Well, let's see if you find it. I'm going to play this and tell me if you...
Oh, so non-peccator. Jesus was either able not to sin or Jesus was not able to sin. If you say Jesus was not able to sin, then the temptation narratives, it's a cakewalk. It's irrelevant.
It's a joke.
Yeah, I mean, if there wasn't a risk involved in that temptation narrative, then we should just forget about it. I mean, let's put it even more bluntly. If there's no risk involved in that temptation narrative, I mean, if God doesn't put it all on the line, if Jesus had screwed up at that point, say bye-bye to the universe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and where do we see this? We see this in the second temptation narrative in Gethsemane.
Right.
In Gethsemane, which is it's a rehash of the, and this is what makes Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ so profound, is he brings that devil figure into the Gethsemane narrative.
Mm-hmm.
We don't tend to think of the devil in that narrative, but it is precisely there where Jesus has to renounce the principle of violence, you know, the satanic principle of violence. And so, and then the third temptation is on the cross. That is the last temptation. If you are the Son of God, come down off there. Mm. I mean, if Jesus, you know, we say, oh, Jesus was divine. He could not be tempted. He just kind of, he was, you know, he just kind of resisted the, if that's the case, he's no good to me.
Yeah.
Mm. That's hardcore. So this was talking about the situation when he was tempted by the quote unquote Satan. And I think we brought it up last time, which is like, was it, and this is where even them in the podcast are like, we're not saying it's one or the other, but I think we're saying that it's even scarier than we think it is. Like, yeah. Instead of putting it on this specific being, it may go even broader and bigger than the idea of a boogeyman. Cause they were talking about is Jesus was confronting himself,
his own dark side potential,
And this was the crazy part where they brought it up, like psychology wise, like in your mind, cause they brought up him being in the desert, not eating for a while, fasting, it's hot, it's all these things. So in your mind cannot determine the difference between reality, fantasy and reality. So they interject with an example of if you have sex with your wife, neurosensors go off. If you have fantasy sex, which is like, you know, if it's masturbation, if it's porn or whatever, those same exact sensors go off and your brain cannot tell the difference. You as a human can, but your brain cannot. So reality to Christ, like what was happening with him in that moment, whether it was a fight against himself or was it an actual like boogeyman type thing next to him, their argument is like, who cares? It wouldn't be any different either or.
Yeah.
The fact is that whether it was a boogeyman trying to get him to do something or whether it was him trying to get him to, the core value is he was having to fight against violence, against ego, against trust. So whether it was an exterior boogeyman or whether it was an interior doubt within himself, that doesn't matter. What matters was, what was he fighting? And it was ego. Because whether it's somebody else that's trying to get you to do something or it's something that remains inside of you, it's still the same thing you're fighting. It doesn't make it any different because it comes from another place. At the core, he was fighting very specific things.
I would say the only reason why it does matter is it frames how you move forward with your life and how you approach certain situations and beliefs and things like that. So I get at the principle at the end of the day, the fight was against the violence, whether it was the boogeyman or his shadow self doesn't matter. But the only reason why it matters is your belief moving forward. Because if you start contending with this boogeyman that doesn't even really exist, then you don't really get to address the internal things that are happening.
Well, that's their point. It doesn't matter. Because if at the end of the day, you understand that whether you're trying to put the face of it on this exterior being that's against you and God, whatever he's trying to get you to do is the same inclination within you if that quote unquote being didn't exist.
So like, I guess that's why it works when a Christian person would rebuke a demon and come against a spirit of alcoholism or whatever, and they would like pray against it and rebuke that demon that's standing right over there, versus somebody who goes to therapy and does the inner work and binds up that inner demon by doing the inner work. They'll get the same result, but one was this way and one was internal.
And I would contend that I think what Jesus was trying, one of the things he was trying to accomplish with this gospel message and this kingdom that he presents forward, is it is about the transformation of your inner person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that journey, although there might be a time and place for that of like, we cast out this thing in the name of Jesus, we could ultimately, the end goal of that is inward transformation.
Right.
But what ends up happening is there's some people that get so caught up in the model of it or in the presentation of it that they forget what the actual end goal is. So the other situation you presented has a very clear end goal or result of it. So the focus is on the end, not the means of it.
Exactly.
So I think they're both like, I think they're both valuable, honestly. I think one, there is a greater temptation to forget what the goal was.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lack of emphasis on being able to do the inner work of that.
Well, I think also it becomes a codependent relationship, which one would say it's healthy to be codependent on Jesus. But I contend that it's not when you put on him things that it's not his responsibility. So in the same way, okay, so if you think, if you get too much on the codependency of it's Jesus is going to keep me from all these things, right? Which I believe in grace. But it wasn't a little green goblin that brought you your first drink. Like, you had to make the decision to walk into whatever store or walk into whatever bar and start drinking. Like, that was you.
Yeah.
You weren't like getting pushed and you're like, no, no, no. And there was some mysterious thing pushing you. You made the decision to do these things. And then we call that thing a demon, which could just mean that it's a manifestation of your lack of self-control. As opposed to, oh, it's alcoholism. No, no, it's more like self-control. Because I remember when I was like trying to bind the spirit of lust and, you know, when I kept slipping before marriage. And it was, I remember God saying, bruh, it's not lust. You're working like a healthy, healthy guy. You see a hot chick, you want to bang her. That's called normal. That's not weird. Why are you trying to make it weird? I was over there like praying against lust, praying against, oh God, take away my drive. And he's like, what? You want me to take away biology that I created for every man to enjoy? That's not what you should be praying. You just lack faith to control yourself until the right one comes. It has nothing to do with sex or lust or any of those things. But I was making all those things evil. So what I did in myself was, now I carry around this shame. I carry around this idea of demons and Satan trying to get at me because he wants me to fall, when all along it was just biology. It was biology that's very healthy. It means I work. It means everything in me is doing what it's supposed to do. I just lacked the faith to hold that back until I found the right person. That was way easier to understand than me trying to like become a spiritual eunuch. You know what I'm saying? Like, where it's like, I don't want my thing to work until I get married. And it's like, do you know what I'm saying? So I think in this regard, I think what's so amazing is that it really is. It's not, the thing I like about this podcast is they're not saying, they say that this is the 100% that this thing doesn't exist, right? Satan doesn't exist. They're just saying they don't think that it's in the way that we've made the existence of it.
Yeah.
Is the spiritual world real? Yes. But I love it how he says, I don't think that, when they talk about the spirit realm, he's like, I don't think it's separated.
Yeah.
I think it's all, we're all in it right now. Like, there is no distinction between the spirit and the regular. Like, we are in all of it right now, flowing continuously all the time. It's around us. We are in it. We're not separated from it. And I think that is just a banging way to look at it.
Yeah. I mean, even just to your point right there, right? Sin is the lie that we've been separated. Right? Sin is the thing that makes me feel like, oh man, now there's this big distance between me and God.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the lie that so many believe, that the fact is you've never been disconnected. You've never been separated. Mm-hmm. And it's like, even like you take a story like in the Bible, it says that Jesus walked through a wall. I think that was very possible because, again, as the spirit and the physical are one, that spiritual realm is, if not realer.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus was just more real than that wall, and he just walked through it. Like, that's crazy to think. But you just think of, like, man, there's so many things that we're capable of, like, actually doing and becoming. That's like, that is very, like, very interesting to think about.
Yeah. That gets into the conversation of that we are all energy.
Yes.
And that if you were to zoom in right? On a cell, on an atom, if you zoom in as far as you can, zoom in on this piece of me, eventually it's going to be vibrational energy.
It's and funny, that yeah.
Anything, this desk, anything is matter of
yeah.
energy. And
that's science. That's like not even yeah. weird. We've made it hocus pocus. It's funny because right. towards the end of this podcast, they talk about that. That at some point we stop thinking of it in that way, which is really like accurate. This is all energy. This is all mm-hmm. atoms, matter. And we stop thinking about it when we turned the idea of the Trinity. They contend against the Trinity ideology. When we called it persons, like three persons in one, because in our minds, we automatically think, oh, that means it's three different people. When he's like, prior to that, it was more like one God, three different energies. Like he flows in three different ways, but he's one.
So I remembered my thought that I had before, mm-hmm. but it also ties into what we're talking about now with energy. So they say that even your thought is matter. Your thoughts are energy, right? And so that's like the science, what people would call like the heebie-jeebies of it, whatever, like, mm-hmm. okay, your energy mm-hmm. and your thoughts are energy. But then it comes back to, we were saying you create your own demon and you speak it out and you become however you address it, you know? Mm-hmm. And reminds me of, you know, the scriptures talking about the power of the tongue, mm-hmm. you know, right. and you create life and death, and out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, and like that kind of thing. So it's almost like another way of looking at us creating our demons. Like we've read those scriptures, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, and that's meant one thing in our Christian life, but it could also be like the demons that we wrestle with, alcoholism or fear or anger. Whatever, anger, rage.
Yeah.
Right? And then you speak these things out and you're creating even more so this demon and giving it this power. They say, watch your tongue, watch what you say, watch what you speak over yourself. Like, don't say those things about yourself. And sure, it's because you may start believing it, but it's also you're creating it.
Yeah.
Well, it's a cultural thing and that's what they contend with. They're like, Satan and demons are really a reflection of the cultural way of believing a certain thing is. Like, this is how it manifests. And they're like, we'll never say that demons always show up in this way or always show up in this way. Or if they get casted out, it always happens like this or it always happens like this, because it is all based like those type of things in what a culture says is normal or the face that they put on it. You know what I'm saying?
Because, yeah, the word that they use is anthropological phenomenon.
Right.
Right. The actual word of the definition of anthropological would be the study of humankind.
Yep. And cultures.
So it's like, yeah. So it's like this phenomenon that's been taking place since humans have been around. And we're all having the invitation to be a part of this or not be a part of this, to give strength to it or take away from the strength of it. You know, so all these sorts of things. So I love it because it's so much more real in the ways that you don't think. And it's not real in the way that you've probably been taught.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me play this next one.
Let's know this. In the Gospels, no demon has a name. Satan is not a name. It's a function.
It's a title. It's kind of like a title, isn't it?
Legion. Yeah. Legion is not a name. Hmm. Hmm. It's the designation of a military unit. Hmm. So in the Gospels, you don't have all these demons with names like you do in First Enoch, where they've all got names, Uriel and Bezalel and Bezaliel and, you know, Curly Larry and Mo and everybody else. You don't have that in the Gospels.
That was super.
My own sense, too, is that when we're dealing with this stuff, we could stand to be far more Christ-centered, that the conversation is not with the demons anyway. So we want to have a conversation with Christ and come into alignment with him. Rather, you know, when in doubt, we repent, which is we turn towards Jesus. We turn towards Jesus from all these other things, and we deal with them in his presence. And that was one of the problems with the whole exorcism thing. It was all about, there was so much about ego versus demon, and I wasn't sure they were different anyway, you know. And
I wasn't sure that they were different anyways. Ego versus demon.
Yeah. That's he's talking about obviously ego in the unhealthy sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Because obviously we very much so need a healthy ego buildup right. in our formative years. But woof.
All right, I got a couple more. Which these are just things that these are ways that blow me. A couple more. Okay. Actually, this one is, I think this is the last one. Okay, hold on.
We also need to talk about the demonic in terms of structures. Structures of oppression. Institutions of oppression. The Department of Defense. The Pentagon. The Kremlin. The White House. The KKK. Focus on the family. I mean, these are demonic institutions. No, no, wait a minute.
Yeah,
wait a minute.
Yeah, you're going to have to unpack wait that one for a lot of people I know.
But listen. They all have the same function.
The accuser.
To create an us-them mentality, to create an enemy-other. Any structure whose goal is to create an enemy-other, some I am not this, I am not, is satanic.
Yeah.
Dang.
That's crazy. I mean, I don't know if I would have said that, but I get what he was saying. You know, I would...
The man has a point.
Any, and this is a good way, look, even to identify in your own life, anytime you start acting in that way where you're creating an accusatory spirit or you're accusing someone without any reason with just how we've been taught. And, you know, we use other scriptures to defend this. Oh, we're supposed to judge one another. We're supposed to do all these things. I always laugh because I'm like, man, we're really good at quoting Paul, not that well with quoting Jesus. Like,
could you imagine if everybody just minded their own business?
It'd be crazy. If no one, like,
could you imagine?
If people really did just care about how they lived and knew that how they lived would be the biggest impact to their world, more so than how they told people how to live. I mean, it would just be a different world. It would be a different world, which, again, we are struggling to do this every day in the sense of, like, we're learning. But this, the idea, when they call him the Satan, the idea that what that is an adversary, you know, when you talk about the devil or the demons, you know, anything that creates this accusatory spirit, man, that makes me scared that I could flow in and out of that. That spirit of the Satan or the devil.
Yeah.
So it makes you scared. But also, if that is true, then this is how we've been operating our whole lives.
Yes. Yeah.
We've
yeah.
been doing it our whole lives. Mm-hmm. So not that it's nothing to be scared of. It's to be aware of.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't mean fear like as in the boogeyman fear. Because again...
Like a holy fear.
Yeah, like it's like,
oh, wow, this is sobering. This is a sobering truth.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, because if we believe, like at some point, like I understand that evil has a presence. There is a power in evil. But if we, for one minute, think that evil is stronger than what we claim to have within us, like how can you even be... Like, we shouldn't even be afraid of it. And, they say it in this podcast. They say the devil is brought up, I think he said, 3 times in the Bible. And each time, it's for the dismissal. Like, quickly dismiss him. Like, he is there. Dismiss him. Dismiss him. Because he's letting you know it's not about that. Don't get stuck on that. That's an easy dismissal. And it's not, like, arrogant to say that. It's just the understanding that God is the most powerful thing, the most powerful energy, the most powerful part of our story that is supposed to already have the victory over everything, you know? So we can't stay stuck over there or give it too much time or give it too much power. You'd be more effective, which one of the guys, the gentleman, I forgot which one, but he was talking about, when he was talking about deliverance ministries, he said his son came up to him and was like, Dad, every time you do those deliverance things, you always come back meaner.
Yeah, and you're mean.
Yeah, you're mean when you do it.
We're supposed to be mean to the demons, right?
Yeah, and he I thought it was interesting that he said, you know, once he started focusing on internal healing, he was like, not only was it doing the exact same outcome, but it was more effective than the quote unquote deliverance ministry. Yeah. And I was like, damn, I love this. I mean, look, I put the, we'll put the link at the bottom of the description. You guys check it out and let us know what you think. We're going to have an awesome conversation with our Patreon fam about this. It'll be part Christmas celebration. And at the same time, I'm curious to see what our Patreon VIP think of this Satan topic. We always have amazing, if you guys don't know, our Patreon is popping. Once a month we do stream Zooms and we chat and we talk and we build, and it's been the most amazing community that has come out of this, like friends for life type of thing, y'all. It's so awesome. It's part of our Patreon top tier VIP. So if you're interested in it, there's a link in the description, and let's keep this conversation going. Hit us up, DM us with any questions, and if you enjoyed this, share it with a friend. Again, if you are listening to this, we are simply introducing ideas that we heard on this podcast, not introducing new theology or telling you this is how you should think. This is just a simple loft, softball loft, where you can decide where it lands. But we're just throwing it up and asking questions to just get your mind thinking. Like, what do you think about all this? DM us, comment, send us a message, and we love to hear from you. And like we say, we pray you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you are always welcome at ours. Cheers.
Cheers.